sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is comedian Joel Chasnoff. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I've been thinking a great deal about the way our Jewish community today directs its efforts and allocates its resources. There are many outstanding Jewish organizations and causes, and they are all deserving of support. But in an aging American Jewish community with declining enrollments for Jewish education and religious school and day school, we are seeing fewer and fewer resources allocated to teaching our children, while more and more of the Jewish community's resources are directed towards Israel advocacy and complicated organizations that are supposed to do something or other to reinvigorate and reimagine the way we Jews do what we do. I am certainly an advocate for Israel, and I believe there are many innovative ways to express Jewish values and rituals, and they should be explored. But the trend away from supporting the core institutions that guarantee the future of Judaism in America is deeply problematic and, frankly, unwise. I mean, if we expect to have actual Jews here in the United States in another generation, it behooves us to make sure that Jewish children are learning about Judaism, are getting connected in ways that will lead to the perpetuation of our great 3,800-year-old religious tradition and culture. And if we're spending less and less on Jewish education for children, how exactly do we expect that to happen? Is yet another pro-Israel advocacy organization or another anti-BDS effort more important than making sure that Jewish children know and are connected to Jewish holidays, have brises and bat and bar mitzvahs, have truly internalized Jewish values? Is it more critical to dedicate our efforts and financial resources to yet another boutique cause, or instead to make sure that there'll be another generation of young Jews who know the Torah and understand why it motivates them to repair the world? I have now served as a cantor, educator, and rabbi for 38 years in the American Jewish community, and I have seen many changes. Jewish education for children today is approached more creatively and energetically than ever by the professionals. But I've also seen as dollars and dedication of Jewish communities and funders have constantly gone to far less important programs and projects, some of which, well, have disappeared. Even the deeply underfunded classrooms of American public schools have better educational tools and resources and technology than almost all the religious school classrooms of today, which are actually very much like the religious school classrooms of many years ago, even if the teaching is more creative. And yet every day in the mail, and in the email, and on social media, I receive invitations to support Jewish organizations and causes that are far less vital to the health of the American Jewish community than Jewish education for kids. And I almost never receive invitations to actually help organizations that care about connecting, educating, and inspiring American Jewish children. It's short-sighted, foolish, perhaps suicidal, and it's time to change that pattern. Israel, I promise, will survive and thrive with slightly less dedication from American Jews, provided that dedication is instead given to educating and inspiring our Jewish young people. Friends, if you are Jewish, contact your local synagogue and see how you can volunteer to make a difference for Jewish children's education. And if you have Jewish children who are not currently enrolled, call your local temple and find out what they offer. Sign your kids up. It's by far the most important Jewish action that you can personally take right now. To play us in this morning on the theme of Jewish education, here's one of our favorite songs, Shalom Rav Le'ohavei Toratecha, a great piece of they who love and learn Torah. It's by our house rock band, Avanim.
Shalom Rav Le'ohavei Toratecha. Shalom Rav. Shalom Rav Ve'eim Amo. Ve'eim Amo. Nirshom Yehi Shalom Shalom Yehi Shalom Bechele Shalva Shalva Shalva
was Avanim and me singing Shalom Rav Le'ohavei Toratecha, a great piece of they who love and study Torah. Melody by my father, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, to a text from the Talmud. When we return in a few moments on To Jewish, a favorite guest of ours, comedian Joel Chasnoff, will explore the source and meaning of humor from a Jewish perspective. Meet him when we come back on To Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice. Because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, comedian Joel Chasnoff, has a Jewish day school education, served in the IDF, and most importantly is a very successful past guest of Two Jewish. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Thrilled to be back.
So I'm a little biased because, as you know, I took a sabbatical trip around the world. You are taking your family around the world. Are you just doing it to gather material, or is there a higher Jewish purpose to all of this?
Well, it's certainly not just to gather material. That's, I guess, a byproduct. I do have a notebook with me all the time to jot down anything I see that's of note and I might want to, you know, look at later. But for the most part, it's family motivated. We have done some Jewish experience type things along the way, but the real motivation is just to slow down time a bit, spend time together as a family, and see the world, which I want my kids to see, and, you know, myself as well.
One of the facts about any writer, and a comedian is really a kind of a writer, right? You write your
Absolutely. Yeah. In the old days, comedians hired people. It was two different things. Now it's one profession, and most comedians look down on anyone who would hire someone to write jokes. So, yeah, I think we're in the age where you write your own material.
It's kind of like male rock singers who don't write their own material as opposed to the people that just do covers.
Yeah, well, from what I know about a lot of the music industry, there are hired guns to write these pop songs, and they scientifically analyze the beats, so that makes me kind of angry, but I believe in...
You're getting ripped off as a comedian, actually.
Yeah, well, I believe, at least for a comic, the most authentic stuff is going to be material that matches you, and only you can write that.
Okay, weird question. Comic-comedian, is there a real dichotomy there?
I use them interchangeably. The word among... in the industry is that a comic says funny things and a comedian says things funny. The idea being that a comedian is a little bit on a higher level because the comedian is someone who analyzes and takes the mundane and makes it funny, whereas a comic just sort of points out what's already bizarre. I think it's just
BS,
interchangeable. I don't know about BS, but to me it's interchangeable and nitpicky, and there are many comedians who, you know, everyone's got their own style, so just to get hung up on the word, it's not worthwhile.
So what's your favorite old Jewish joke?
Well, there's a joke, I think, out there that I feel says a lot about who Jews are, and that's why I like it. It's about the priest, the minister, the rabbi, as all of them go, and they're talking about what they want people to say at their funerals. And the priest says, at my funeral, I want people to say that I was a generous human being. And the minister says, at my funeral, I want people to say that I was available and listened to everyone. And the rabbi says, at my funeral, I want people to say, look, he's moving. And I like that because it's constructed well. It's a surprising punchline, but that is also perfectly logical because that's how Jews think. And that's why I like the joke. I think it sheds light on the Jewish point of view and valuing life and our optimism, never, never giving up, even in the most dire of circumstances, for example, at your own funeral.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic joke. We will talk much more with comedian Joel Chasnoff when we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's 4 ingredients in electronic cigarettes. propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 10 months to go until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report, as we choose the new leader for our nation. We Jews are particularly sensitive on issues of immigration to the U.S., knowing that many Jews were denied entry to America prior to World War II and ended up dying in Hitler's concentration camps. But not all candidates for president have been so sensitive on the issue, to say the least. Farcically, in his very first paid TV ad, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump shows footage of dozens of people swarming a border fence, while the narrator says of Trump, he'll stop illegal immigration by building a wall on our southern border that Mexico will pay for. The clear suggestion is that the footage is of the southern border between the U.S. and Mexico, but it's not. It's 5,000 miles away in a small Spanish enclave in Morocco. The footage was actually shot by an Italian TV station in Morocco. Morocco, by the way, is in North Africa, not North America, Donald. And it was shot back on May 1st of 2014. By the time the footage made it into Trump's ad, both Republica TV's logo, that's the Italian TV station, and the 2014 timestamp had been erased. Regardless of Trump's demagoguery, the Pew Research Center notes that last month, for the first time since the 1940s, more immigrants from Mexico are leaving the U.S. than coming into the U.S. That shift is due to the slow economic recovery here after the Great Recession. It's made the U.S. less attractive to Mexicans, as well as, of course, stricter enforcement of U.S. immigration laws on the border right now. Either way, Trump's first ad on immigration was about as fraudulent as you could possibly imagine. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our Mivinan Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So one of the things that you experience as a shliacha in America is the opportunity to see America through different eyes. So you
America?
See things here. Well, when you come here, America, you've heard of it. When you come here, you see things that we take for granted. When Americans go to Israel, we see all kinds of things that are wonderful that you would take for granted. Tell us about some of that.
So I was with a group like a few months ago, and really, my goal was to see Israel through their eyes and to be a tourist in my own country, which was amazing because I really discovered or saw for the first time things that I saw many times but never pay attention. Like for me, I take for granted the solidarity that we have in Israel, that, you know, the fact that we call each other achi, achoti.
Brother, sister.
Yeah, it's not just a saying. It's not just the words. Even though it's, you know, Israel, it's a small, but it's not that small country. It's, you know, we have 8 million people, but the fact that we have a mandatory service at the IDF and everyone need to serve,
yeah, everybody
at the IDF.
Goes in the military. So yeah. Everybody has this common experience.
Nahon. And when you go to the IDF, to the army, of course you have a very, intimate relationship. And you develop like, you know, you need to be, sometimes you need to be dependent on your, you know, your team. So the relationship become very, very crucial for 2-3 years. So in addition to your own family, you developed, you know, you're developing a lot of other family members, you know, all over Israel. So wherever you will go, you will have a secondary family member. So one of the phenomena that the groups saw that we have in Israel, we have much less number of homelessness and people that are, you know, in the streets.
Far fewer homeless.
Yeah, right. Mamash.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
A small number of, we still have them, but it's, and I explained them that because of the solidarity, because of the close relationship that we have in the army with people are from all over the country. So wherever
and
you
and
will
every
go,
walk of society.
And if you're not fortunate enough and, you know, and something happened in your life, and even if you don't have family, enough family, wherever you will go, you will find someone that will help you. And that's why. That's why we don't have a lot of people who are in the streets.
It's interesting. You know, when you think about it, America has a much higher per capita income than Israel. I mean, Israel has done incredibly well. It's a first world country. It's kind of expensive. But we still make more money than Israelis, even, you know, based on what expenses are like. And yet we have a much worse problem with homeless, with really low levels of society. And in Israel, it hasn't quite turned out mm-hmm. that way. Some of it is the old socialist ethos, probably.
Nahon.
But some of it is this level of compassion and knowledge that you share across all society. It's a good lesson. Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk next week.
Toda.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Boker Tov.
Boker Or. Tikkun Olam is a phrase that's used again and again all over the Jewish world.
Yes.
It means repair of the world.
Right.
But it means so much more, and sometimes it doesn't mean what people use it for. Mm. Can you explain Tikkun Olam?
Sure, and first I'd like to just say that the mission of the Tucson Hebrew Academy includes a statement of values, and one of those values is Tikkun Olam, the moral imperative that each of us has as a Jew to make the world a better place. You could be as grandiose as saving the planet, or you can be as microcosmic as helping your neighbor or recycling your trash. So the idea of Tikkun Olam for me is to make the world a better place, to do what you can with your work, with your volunteering, with your energy and your resources to make things better.
So there's a very famous story about Tikkun Olam, the Midrashic story that says that a not very successful student was given the charge. You know, all the other students were given more practical things to do, found a yeshiva as a rabbi was dying. And the worst student was given the charge of Tikkun Olam to heal the whole world. Mm. And he went around and tried to take on the big projects and failed at all of them and finally went home and began to fix his own life and his family's life. And that's how it starts. We understand, I think, those of us who do this sort of work and teach a lot and yeah. talk about repairing the world, that it's not always the grandiose projects that work, that often we have to start with ourselves.
Well, let's face it, you know, not all of us have a global impact in our daily lives. So the challenge becomes with what can we do as individuals? How can we live in a way that gives back to the community, that enriches the life experience that we have with our families, that supports our communities and our neighborhoods? What can we do to help the city in small ways? It doesn't have to be revolutionizing an industry. Maybe it means you're going solar at home, or perhaps it means that taking more time to spend quality moments with people that are important, helping out, doing a little bit of volunteering, teaching a kid to read, for example. Of course, as an educator, I would think of something like that. But it's about little things. And it's about, I think, also living in a way that your impact with those around you is a positive one.
I hope that everybody takes in this newish secular year the impetus to do a little tikkun olam. John, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
Welcome. Let's go out there and make the world a better place.
We have a special visit from a good friend. I don't want to say an old friend. She's still young. I'm old. Laura Bialas, the filmmaker of Rock in the Red Zone, a terrific new documentary that'll be showing here at the Jewish Film Festival in Tucson. Good morning and welcome back, Laura.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So give us the kitzur, the short version of how Rock in the Red Zone eventuated.
Basically, about 8 years ago, I heard about this small town in Israel near the Gaza Strip that was sort of like the Liverpool, if you may, of Israel, had produced a lot of Israeli rock bands. And it happened at that point and had been getting hit by rockets that were launched over the border from Gaza for about 7 years at that point. And so I was intrigued about the process of how young artists make their music in a war zone, in a conflict zone. And so I basically went there to tell that story, and it ended up being a very life-changing journey for me.
Very life-changing. You met and eventually married one of the musicians there, got a kid, moved to Sderot, lived under the shadow of rockets. It's an incredible documentary.
Thank you. It took many years to get it right. It was what I call a long cook project.
Now, the musicians, you know, it's interesting that Sderot, of all places, had been this hotbed of very interesting mixtures of Mizrahi, Eastern music, Ethiopian influence, Ashkenazic music, pop, rock, all kinds of stuff. Like, everybody there seemed to have been born with a guitar or a drumstick in their hands.
Yeah, they used to make jokes when I was interviewing the musicians, like, why this place? You know, why is everybody so musical here, and why is there so much musical talent here? And they used to just kind of look at me with these puzzled expressions and say, some people make a joke that it's like in the water or something. But I developed my own opinion, which was that there was a lot of mentorship throughout the generations, and that music kind of became a tool for coping and for sort of breaking out of a challenging situation for a lot of these people when they were growing up as teenagers.
Music kind of set them free and also allowed them to express all the emotional trauma they were going through, you know, being hit almost daily with rockets, with sirens.
Yeah, and what's so interesting is when I got into it, and this is more sort of, you know, when you see the whole film, but, I thought music had started with the rockets, and I found out that the music had started many, many years before in the late 80s and was still kind of setting people free from a different phenomenon, which was sort of this Israeli periphery society in which this is considered a development town. It's not,
it's not Tel Aviv, it's not Jerusalem, it's not even Haifa.
It's socioeconomically challenged, I would say, you know.
It's a great documentary. I encourage everybody to see it. I have to say it's one of the best pieces I've seen in a long time. It's called Rock in the Red Zone at the Tucson Jewish Community Center Jewish Festival here in Tucson, Arizona. Laura, thanks so much. And by the way, it'll be showing in a community new year. How many communities will it be showing in this year?
We have bookings for about 50 more cities that it's going to be going out to in 2016. And we already had we opened in theaters in New York and LA this past, just a couple months ago,
right,
in November and December. So
go see it, Rock in the Red Zone. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
The Tucson Jewish Film Festival will be screening Laura Bialas' film, Rock in the Red Zone, this coming Saturday night, January 16th, at the JCC at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss it. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is going May 29th to June 9th of 2016. If you want to go on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, tojewishradio18@gmail, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Binyamin, a young Hasidic guy from Israel, leaves home, goes to Los Angeles. Finally, after years away, he comes back to visit his family. Binyamin, where's your beard? Asks his mother when she sees him. Oh, Ma, in L.A., nobody wears a beard. But at least you keep Shabbos, his mother asks. Mom, business is business. In L.A., everybody works on the Shabbos. But kosher food you still eat, his mother asks. Mother, in L.A., it's kind of hard to keep kosher. There's silence. The elderly mother considers what she's just heard. Then she leans over and whispers in Benjamin's ear, Binyamin, tell me, are you still circumcised? That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. You should live and be well. Now a word of Torah. This week our people gets out of Egypt, or to be more accurate, we chant the Torah portion of Bo, which includes the exodus from Egyptian slavery and the establishment of the rites and rituals of the observance of the Passover. The build-up to this week's Parsha has been steady and dramatic. Plague followed plague, 10 of them, of course, rising in severity as the one God overcomes the long roster of Egyptian idols and gods and frees the people of Israel from their long night of oppression and slavery. Finally, in Bo, our ancestors become a truly free people. Since we're now liberated, you might expect us to immediately cast off the memory of oppression and enslavement, reject our history of degradation, move on to new and better things. Oddly, God, through Moses, commands us to do quite the opposite, to remember slavery and how we were freed only by God's great acts. From this point on, we are reminded repeatedly in the Torah to remember those in our own society who are oppressed, to help them, because after all, we ourselves were slaves in the land of Egypt. You are strangers in a strange land, we tell ourselves repeatedly in the Torah. Therefore, recalling our own degradation, we must help the oppressed and protect strangers in our own land. I can think of no other people or nation that spends so much effort remembering how humble its origins. Unlike so many other national myths, we Jews do not highlight our ancient and sacred pedigree or our divine origin. Instead, we remind ourselves again and again that we are the descendants of slaves who had nothing to call their own, not even their own bodies. Even on holidays that have nothing to do with the Exodus or freedom, we incorporate our memory of slavery and liberation. Every Kiddush, every single Shabbat includes the phrase that we are celebrating Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, to recall the exodus from Egyptian slavery. The message is powerful. We are to recall the fact of our own oppression so that we will identify with those in our world who need our help today. The Sedra of Bo teaches us that we must seek always to redeem the world through our own actions. Our connection is with the lowly. Our efforts to heal the world come from the knowledge that we ourselves have exactly the same background. It's a profound lesson in humility that leads directly to charity, tzedakah, and the promulgation of righteousness in the world. Even in challenging times, we must remember those who are oppressed, those who have less than we. And no matter how much we rise in the world, no matter how influential or powerful our people may be or our Jewish nation may become, we are always to identify with those who have less and need our help. Today, there are still slaves in the world, not metaphoric slaves, actual human beings subjugated by others. January 2016 is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. As the U.S. presidential proclamation issued on December 31st said, human trafficking occurs in countries throughout the world and communities across our own nation. Children are forced to fight as soldiers. Young people are coerced into prostitution, and migrants are exploited. People from all walks of life are trafficked every day. The current estimate is that there are 35 million people, 35 million, who exist in some form of slavery right now. These include children and adults forced to perform slave labor, women and men coerced into prostitution or serial rape in harems, children forced to become soldiers. The film Beasts of No Nation highlighted their plight this past fall. There are those in debt bondage, women sold into forced marriages, people trafficked, and many other forms of slavery. There are countries where as much as 4% of the population today is made up of slaves. Five countries have more than 1 million people in slavery right now. By some estimates, India has 15 million. On this week, when the Torah teaches us of our great liberation, I urge you to go to walkfree.org. That's walkfree.org, an Australian group that's done much to publicize the problem of contemporary slavery. Go and explore ways in which you can support Parshat Bo's great message to make a difference for freedom today. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, comedian Joel Chasnoff, will help us understand the place of a clean Jewish comic in this world. Find out when we return here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Just when you thought things in the Middle East couldn't get much worse, they did. Jordan summoned Iran's ambassador in Amman to condemn an attack on the embassy in Saudi Arabia in Tehran and Iranian interference in Arab affairs. Tensions between Shiite Muslim Iran and Sunni Muslim Saudi Arabia have spiraled since the execution of a Shiite cleric in Saudi Arabia. Iranian protesters stormed the Saudi embassy in Tehran early last week, and Shiite Iran's top leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, predicted divine vengeance for the execution of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, an outspoken opponent of the ruling Al Saud family in Saudi Arabia. The Jordanian government stressed its condemnation of the Iranian interference in the internal affairs of Arab states. No surprise. It also rejected Iranian statements that it said represented interference in internal Saudi affairs. The Iranian ambassador was told to relay the Jordanian position to his government immediately. This is actually kind of mild. Iraq, however, has offered to mediate between the two regional rivals to reduce tensions. The Shiite-led government in Baghdad relies on Iranian help to battle the extremist ISIS state, but it is also trying to repair ties to oil-rich Saudi Arabia, which last week sent an ambassador to Baghdad for the first time in 25 years. Iraqi leaders are counting on internal unity between Sunnis and Shia to push back ISIS and prevent sectarian reprisal in Iraq. Saudi Arabia cut ties with Iran last week. Arab states Bahrain and Sudan have also cut ties with Iran, while the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, partially downgraded its relations with Iran. Iran has accused the Sunni Muslim monarchy of Saudi Arabia of using the attack on its embassy as an excuse to sever ties and increase sectarian tensions. And Israel sits back and watches the intra-Muslim brawl and the further complication of the huge mess to the Near East of it as an interested bystander. The great Israeli poet Chaim Guri has refused to accept the prize for Zionist works of art awarded by Israel's Culture and Sports Ministry. Guri had been named as the winner of the Literature Prize last week, but he declined it. Guri is 92 years old. He has won the prize for his most recent book of poetry, Though I Wished for More of More. That collection was published last September. Chaim Guri told Haaretz that he turned down the award worth 50,000 shekels because even though I have questions about this prize, this time my refusal stemmed from the attempt to link the book with the subject matter of the prize. Guri's name appeared on the original list of winners, released by the Culture Ministry last week, but was missing when the official Israeli announcement was made this week. Also a novelist, journalist, and documentary filmmaker, Chaim Guri is considered the greatest living Israeli poet of the generation from the 1948 War of Independence. He has published 12 books of poetry, 10 works of fiction and nonfiction, and many translations and articles. Over the years, he's won the Israel Prize, the Bialik Prize, and the Sokolov Prize. Many of his works have been turned into well-known Israeli songs. In a letter he sent to the judges on the prize committee, Guri explained that he did not think his latest work was appropriate for the prize. He recommended awarding it to a young writer. I told them immediately I would not accept it. I will not say what my opinion of the prize for Zionist art is. I was born a Zionist. I will die a Zionist. And all my life I fought for Zionism. But I do not find a connection between this book and this prize. Guri said the book was a clearly personal work of a man in his last years, taking an accounting of his life and memories. The prize for Zionist-oriented art is awarded to artists in six fields every year by Israel: literature, dance, cinema, theater, music, and plastic arts. It is awarded for work that provides an expression of Zionist values, Zionist history, and the return of the Jewish people to its homeland, according to the Culture Ministry. The decision to award the prizes has stirred controversy and protest at times. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Joel Chasnov, is a comedian, not only a funny guy, but a serious thinker. He's written a book about the funny experiences he had in the Israeli military. He has a day school background and has now begun to travel the world with his kids. Welcome back, Joel.
Thank you.
So as a funny guy, you're also a serious guy. Do you find that most comedians actually have a very serious side? Are you guys always on?
I feel that people in general are grossly disappointed when they meet comedians because they expect someone to be kind of like the late Robin Williams would be on a talk show. Hyperactive, throwing out punchlines, zingers this way and that. And that's not what comedians are. In general, I find comedians to be very quiet people, very brainy, sort of hanging out at the side, taking notes on everything happening in front of him or her. When comedians get together, then there's a lot of one-upmanship and comic banter. But in general, I don't find comedians to be on. And I think typically you wouldn't know who's a comedian if you just saw them sitting around. You would have to find out. You know, in general, I find comedians to be pretty quiet thinkers, serious people.
You know, many comedians have gone on to become serious actors, even without training in acting per se. What is there about the experience that lets you assimilate different viewpoints, actually take on personas that are not your own?
Well, I think going from comedy, if your skill is comedy, I think it's easier to then go to drama. If you're skill is drama, I think it's then harder to go to comedy. Comedy is all about timing, and I think that's something you might be able to learn, but a lot of it is either you got it or you don't. I mean, great comedic timing is, in a way, I feel, an innate skill. And once you've got that down, you can move to drama. And what is it about comedians? I think comedians are really good listeners. That's how comedians get their material, just by paying attention, listening to the smallest detail that doesn't make sense. And you know, really good acting, I think, is listening to your acting partners. So if you've learned how to listen and pay attention, you'll be a good actor. I think comedians in general are pretty unselfish actors. They're actors who don't try to hog the stage, but who really know that it's about sharing the stage. Certainly improv comedy is all about making your fellow improvisers look good.
So as a funny guy, but also one who thinks seriously about a variety of topics, you automatically, as somebody Jewish or something of an outsider in the world, you went to Israel where you were really an American outsider in the IDF. Is there an outsider perspective that makes it easier to catch those little nuances of humor?
Well, I think all comedians are outsiders. You know, like I kind of alluded to before, I feel like if there's a party going on, the comedian is not the center of the party. The comedian is the person in the corner, kind of sulking, taking notes, figuring out what could be different, what should be different, what's wrong. And outsiderness, I think, is key to being a good comedian. Now, we Jews have always been outsiders. So in addition to any personality traits that make you feel like an outsider, we have this whole sense of belonging or not belonging that makes us outsiders. I do wonder if we'll see as many Jewish comedians in the future as we used to. I kind of doubt we will, because we're not really outsiders anymore, and certainly not in America. We fit in seamlessly. We're well assimilated. I don't know that we've got that outsider sense about us that we used to have and relied on.
They used to say that all comics are Jewish comics, even some of the black comics are Jewish comics. As you noted, there's a change in the way Jews are perceived, Jews are part of society, but boy, it seems like there's just this unbelievable run of Jewish comedy. It hasn't quite dried up yet.
Well, we had a great run. I mean, the study of 20th century comedy is really the study of Jews in America in so many ways. Mel Brooks has a great quote that I don't know verbatim, but I'm sure you can, you know, find if you look it up, but how he feels like comedy is something he turned to because he felt like he didn't fit in as a Jew in America. And there is that outsider quality. Now in New York, there are still plenty of Jewish comedians, but either Judaism doesn't come up in their act at all, or if it does, it's sort of an apologetic, shameful, well, I did this because I'm a Jew, and relying on that as a punchline, and you really don't see much Jewish pride. And, you know, in any sense that these are Jewish comedians who are going to carry the mantle into the future, I think it's left to guys like me, Avi Lieberman, Ilan Gold, Modi. We're sort of the four who have taken Judaism, embraced it, make it a part of our lives, and find the humor in living a life that has Judaism as opposed to hiding it or denying it or being ashamed of it.
You know, if you'd have ever told me that the word Jewy would be used as though it was some sort of cute thing and not something pejorative, including, you know, I mean, Jon Stewart, wildly successful, not exactly overwhelmingly proud of his Jewishness.
Yeah, I mean, Jew is almost, it's a different type of adjective now, and it's almost like a cute, you know, do we, it's sort of like a light way to get to mention that you're Jewish without embracing it. I think a lot of, you know, we're in this age where science and logic is very dominant, and the idea of having ritual or having traditions that are thousands of years old, a lot of probably very intelligent people can't square that with being a liberal, scientific, open-minded thinker. And personally, I can, but I think that might be what we're up against right now, is we haven't done a good job, maybe in our Hebrew schools, of teaching how Judaism and science and how progressive thought and Judaism can actually go hand in hand.
You know, a lot of people finish their bar mitzvah and that's it. They don't get any more Jewish education. That wasn't your experience. Tell us a little bit about your background and how it's shaped your comedy, too.
Well, for me, really, the Jewish formal education ended after eighth grade. My mother did make me attend classes with my rabbi in high school.
That is really torture.
And you know, what was Jewish torture punishment. Is that my one goal in high school was to play in the high school baseball team. And the classes would often conflict. So I would be out. I played second base. I would be in position.
And that's a Jewish position. I played second base.
Yeah, because we don't have a good arm. We're a little kind of small.
Yeah, not really big. You know, you can't hit it out.
And she would show up.
Contact hitter quick.
Right. So she'd show up and honk her horn, and I had to leave the game, and they had to put in someone else so I can go to my class in my uniform with the rabbi. So my education didn't continue after eighth grade. What I did do was go to camp, Camp Ramah, and that, for me, was enough, and enough of a continuance. So to that extent, it did continue, and I went to Israel with Ramah, and you know, I didn't go to day school after eighth grade, but summer camp was vital.
Summer camp is also a place at which there's a lot of freedom and flexibility. Did you do any comedy at Ramah?
I didn't do what you'd call formal comedy, but I learned and enjoyed being funny. I mean, we all did. I mean, it's the perfect place. You know these people so well. You know every quirk of everybody in your age group. At Camp Ramah, you had to go for 2 months when I was going there. And so the intensity of the experience, you know everyone so well. You also know how to make fun of every situation because you're in this really, really intense environment. So I didn't do comedy shows per se, but I got a lot of practice just sitting around and being spontaneously funny, which... you know, which I think does contribute to the skill later on.
Kind of Jewish improv all the time.
That's a good way to put it. Camp, in a way, can be Jewish improv if you're a funny, outgoing kid.
Okay, so in Israel, did your comedy translate?
I remember going to the army. My Hebrew was very good, but I was certainly not an Israeli. And about 4 weeks in, I made my first joke in Hebrew, and I remember thinking, like, now I'm one of them. I feel like humor is the final bar in a language. Maybe there's all these other things that pile up along the way to becoming fluent, but once you can be funny in a language, I think that's when you've really mastered it. And I remember feeling when I could make jokes and be funny in Hebrew, that's when I really fit in.
You know, Army doesn't seem like it should be funny. You make it funny in your book. How often was it really funny?
Well, you know, what does Woody Allen say? Comedy is tragedy plus time. I mean, the Army, I wouldn't say the Army is funny. I would say it's absurd. The idea of taking kids who graduated high school 2-3 weeks ago, giving them guns, putting the responsibility of the country on their shoulders, that's a crazy notion. Your commanders are 19, your officers are 20. So when you're in it, it doesn't always feel funny, but we got an hour every night to sit around, free time to shower, read the newspaper, and just hang out. And when we were doing that, we would recap the day and make fun of our commanders and of each other. And that's when you realize how absurd it really is. And that's where the humor comes from, just the absurdity of the experience.
So it's almost like Jewish camp, but with guns.
In my book, I call it summer camp with guns because there is that brotherly feeling, but you're also walking around armed.
So you're going around the world. Can we expect another book when you get done?
Anything I do, there's always the idea that I'd like to share that experience somehow. Will there be another book? I certainly am thinking about it, but it has to be done the right way. I don't know that a straight-up memoir would be the format for this one. I don't have a format in mind yet. But I do think it's an experience people would want to hear about. It's certainly funny things have happened, and it would just be a matter of finding the right way to share them.
So, you know, obviously you are gaining some material in the course of this, although that's not the pure goal of your trip. What's the funniest thing that's happened so far?
Wow. Putting me on the spot.
I apologize.
Funniest thing that happened.
You're so good on the spot. It's such a natural thing.
Yeah.
You've had so much experience.
I also feel like so much of what's funny is not what happens is funny, but what happened is kind of painful or off-putting, and then later on you give it kind of a funny spin. I mean, some of the experiences that stand out are just the, as we talked about earlier, driving and being on these buses and taxi cabs, driving up mountains where there's only one lane and the driver's smoking with one hand and fiddling with his phone on the other. And, you know, that's a harrowing experience, but given enough time, you could make something funny out of it. You know, being in restaurants where people around you are eating guinea pig, like, and it looks like a guinea pig, the head is on there. That's disturbing when it's happening, but I could see myself turning it into something eventually.
And it's a good argument for being kosher, actually.
I became vegetarian. I'm now vegetarian for 6 weeks, ever since someone ordered guinea pig at the table right next to me, and it turned my stomach so much that it finally hit me what it means to eat meat that it was once living. So chicken, meat, I don't need that stuff anymore, and I have no craving.
How does your family respond to that?
Well, you know, of course they try to convince me and hold. In Argentina now, they're eating steaks, and I admit it looks good, but all I've got to remind myself is
that guinea pig that it was just sitting
the guinea
there.
Pig or just the cow. That this was a living, breathing thing, and I am not missing it. I have no desire.
I want to thank comedian Joel Chestnut for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can find out more about him from his website, which I hope he's keeping up. What's the website?
Well, we have, you know, my website is my name, joelchasnoff.com, and we also have a blog chronicling our trip, which is Chasnoff We Go, with dashes between the words. So www.chasnoff-we-go.com. And that's the blog with photographs and some insights about where we've been so far.
I can't wait to see what your material is like after you get back.
Neither can I, believe me. It's two of us.
Not to mention your agent.
Right.
Joel, thanks so much.
Of course, Sam. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out here on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Dr. Robert Brooks, a compelling, interesting, and engaging psychologist who writes about mindset and especially our ability to bounce back from challenges. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from Chazan Aaron Ben Susan. It's his setting of the Psalm Tov Lehodot, It's Good to Give Thanks to God. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.